What we thought we would do this afternoon is very, very briefly. This is your session. I mean, if you've been with us since we started, we talked about the history of South Africa. We talked about how we ended up here. We talked about the church in South Africa and the way the church could respond here. And the question is, what can you do? Now, in this country, there's always the danger that when you say to people, what can we do? People think in terms of, can I give money? No, we're not asking you for money. Because a lot of people feel good if they write a check and say, I've written my check, or goodbye. And you know, no, that's not what is at stake here. I think if we can say, if we were to ask the question, what can I do? I think you've really done it. I mean, you've done it by coming here. You've done it by coming to this session. You've done it by sitting in and wrestling with the questions. Some of the questions may create a lot of conflict. You may wonder if you go back to your congregation whether they are going to think, my God, why did he smoke up that mountain? And you know, and you know, you may go back and say, my God, what did he do up there? You know, so it's all we are saying is that you know, we don't have the answers, but we can only share experiences and say, this is the way we see it. And you know, and I think you've done it. I mean, from the little kids yesterday who sang, and you know, it's you've done it. And then the only thing we can do this afternoon is probably answer some of the questions you have. One thing which I have talked about is sanctions. Now, if you, I don't know whether you're here, you remember this piece I gave you on voices from Namibia? And in the back, it had the names of the bills and what. We still have some copies which you can get from over there. And you know, but if when I go around to colleges, and I always, of course, meet the same question, what can I do? My answer is very simple. If you can, you know, while you're here, develop a desire know more about Southern Africa, whether it's South Africa, whether it's Namibia, you've done the job. You know, because the biggest problem we have is ignorance. And you know, I meet people who say, well, I come from a conservative white congregation and you know, there are no black people in my town, and how can we respond to this? I have been to places where they have been in Montana, and then I went to some rural place in Montana, and you know, there were no black people for miles and miles and miles. And you know, those folks were just as committed because they simply made themselves aware of what's happening in South Africa. And one, if I may give you one message, please don't fall into the trap of loving black people in South Africa more than you love white South Africans. You see, South Africa is a country that's made up of black and white people. We are doomed to be together. So if you come and love blacks only in 1988, you might have to come back in 1998 and love whites only. So, you know, we are actually fighting that. We are fighting this policy that wants to divide us into, you know, blacks are inferior, whites are superior. That's what we're fighting. And, you know, we ask you to stand up for justice, to stand up for the truth, which as it applies to both black and white South Africans. The film we showed about the cry of reason, remember, if you did see it, it actually was showing you black and white Christians who were wrestling with the commands of the Bible and the gospel in a place as South Africa. So, you know, it's when we say apply sanctions, we are not saying apply sanctions just to help black people, because you know, if you can imagine that if we were to force, let's take any company, Coca-Cola, to get out of South Africa, Coca-Cola employs both blacks and whites. So if you say to me, it will only hurt black people, in other words, you're saying the white workers are immune, right? And if you say that, and in fact, you are confirming what they say, because they are saying because we are white, we are superior, or whatever. And yet, it's just remember that apartheid affects everybody. I mean, and it affects black people worse than it affects white people. That's true, but it affects everybody. So, you know, it starts in your congregation, it starts, you know, in your church, it starts in your town. And I can tell you, I've worked with more than 100 towns in this country that have wrestled on the issue of South Africa, more than 25 states now have legislation, and the federal government, Congress is wrestling with legislation. So there are a lot of things that are being done, and all we are asking, if you can be able to say to your neighbors, you know, I understand why this is happening in South Africa because of this, this, and this. This is my experience. That's more than anybody would ask from you. So why don't you, so that today, this afternoon, we're going to open it up to you so you can ask all the questions. I'm leaving tomorrow. So
I'm leaving too. Basically, I can tell you from the grassroots what we do in the Bay Area and other communities. What we do is target some of the churches and keep abreast with who is the South African government bringing to South Africa, and obviously they work hand in hand with the State Department. So if you need the information, we organize people, we go and picket, like for instance, not too long ago, they had Gacha Buthelezi, and he is somebody who is not for what we want. He is trying to encourage the sanctions in South Africa. And we want comprehensive sanctions in South Africa. So we went and picked it in San Francisco. And that was very effective because what we wanted is to expose South Africa and him to the people in San Francisco, of which most people know him, but they don't know what he stands for. So those things. Then we targeted the unions, teachers union, any other union, whether it's the industry, auto industry. Let me just say labor unions, they are very effective. And we target those if we have something like a celebration, a commemoration of June 16th. We invite all those people and give them information and have a mailing list go around. And it's very effective for us because we can network between Southern California, Northern California, even New York, who is in town or what's going on in South Africa. Like for instance, this Sharpeville 6, which these young men were about to be executed. What we did is basically a simple thing of having people, churches, your co-workers, people in the street, write us the ambassador in Washington, D.C., at the South African Embassy. You don't have to insult them. You write a basic letter that you don't agree with the policies and this and that. How you feel about it? And some would even send a telex. Some of the people wrote straight to Pretoria, to the Prime Minister. So these young people were not executed. So those are the things how you feel that you can write your letters to them through your unions, and half the time, what we do, again, in the Bay Area, is get information and disperse as much as I can. We don't have access or a direct office, so what we do, I would make 100 copies from my job and somebody else, and before you know it, it's all over. And if there's something that's happening, you only need one person in one union to be a direct contact. And recently we've been talking about the issue of the refugees in Southern Africa. So some of the medical doctors, not that to say blacks or black doctors here or white doctors, all the medical doctors were trying to see what they can do about medical supplies in South Africa. And in the past, what we used to do, we'd go to an auction and buy a whole bunch of clothes and box them up and talk to an airline that flies cargo somewhere in the frontline states, and they will take that for free as long as you have a contact person. So in essence, it's really up to you people who are here, how you can utilize your skills by networking. And basic thing is have somebody in your office who stays in touch. If you hear about something, call somebody. You'll be amazed what you can get. We even call taxes, and they would call us asking for information. There's something that's going on there that we're not aware of over here. And then we act on it. Like, for instance, when the sanction issue came up, this was a classic case for us. They were having a toll-free number in Kentucky. They were, the South African government was putting up this propaganda video. And you can call it the toll-free number and they will send you. So, which was good. So we organized almost 150 people, give them the toll-free number, and call them. So they came for the call anyway. And there's always somebody there. So the bill got too high, so they cut it off. So they couldn't proceed with the video issue. Then they started sending pamphlets, and these things come up from different offices. You don't know who's really, like what Dumsani was saying, with these people who write some articles who are in the Bay Area. So you get that information and you write back that I don't agree with you. And editorial could make an impact in your local paper. For what? That you just write them that we don't agree with this and that and that. Now the issue is us here as Lutherans. What are we doing? It's our church and this is still feeding on this system. So if we network and say we disagree with this as a congregation, as a Lutheran family, all of us, regardless of your race, it will have an impact. They will have to listen, because indirectly we are contributing. Our offering probably is going to some of the material that these are the reasons we don't want to withdraw money from South Africa. They could have used those that money for something else, that to send me information that I don't want to hear. That's how I feel about it. So we can network here by sharing addresses, get to the signers. If I get material where you are, 25 cents is not that much for us, because you're going to inform 10, 15 other people, and that has an impact. So if there are any other questions, I think I've said.
But I say, just for starters, you can go over to the bookstore here and get some air forms and address them to Reverend Pastor Tsele in prison in South Africa, and write to him and to his wife and children and to Bafta. And you can get a regular letter and send it to the ambassador of South Africa in Washington. And when we get home, we're going to write a letter to our ELCA pension fund. My husband's a pastor, and we didn't realize what was all was involved. We realize a lot more now.
Right.
So we'll write to them and tell them we do not want our pension money in South Africa.
Oh yeah, it's Reverend Tsele is a Lutheran pastor who is in jail in South Africa. There are quite a few Lutherans in jail in South Africa and Namibia. And you know, so our point is that you might not want to save a Methodist like me, but you might want to save a Lutheran. So that's okay too, you know. The other thing, this is the only commercial you'll hear. I am coordinator of what is known as a Religious Action Network. I work with congregations, whether they be Jewish, Muslim, Christian, I mean Protestant, whatever, Catholic, that work on South Africa. If you want your congregation to be on a mailing list where you can receive some of this information much quicker than you've heard it, you probably have heard things here where you wonder, my God, I wish I had known about these things when they haven't. If you want your congregation to be on this mailing list, all you have to do is give me the name and number, I mean name, address of your church, your pastor, or even you as an individual, and I'll put you on the mailing list, and we'll keep you informed. I mean, this is a way of making sure that you are involved. But I mean, there are a lot of things that you can do, and you know, it's there are a lot of things that you can do in whatever area you are, in whatever town you are, without really having to move mountains, so to speak. But anyway,
yeah.
The gentleman had a question.
I just had a question. There's a film which is opening around the country. It's in Seattle right now. And I'm sorry I can't give you the title, but it deals with the white woman reporter who
supported
of black causes.
Right.
And I believe gave sanctuary to a black youth. And I saw the previews. It tugs at one's emotion, but I was wondering if you'd seen it, were aware of it, and had any idea of how realistic and honest it is.
It is honest. In fact, my organization, the Africa Fund, which is listed here, did the premiere in New York. And the Africa Fund receives money. We receive money from people, from congregations, whatever they want to target for South Africa. And the people who did a world apart, it's based on the life of Ruth First, who was killed by the South African government through a letter bomb because she was a member of the African National Congress and was based in Mozambique. Now, this is a good film for those of you. I mean, somebody said to me, you know, last night said, you know, I come from a congregation where if I mention something, they're going to say, we don't deal with political issues, you know, as if Christ just came for the nice things, right? And, you know, but this is a thing where this is a story about a mother-daughter relationship. I mean, what happens to a mother who takes those unpopular causes and is away from home and is away to her children? It's a human interest story about, but it's called A World Apart. And you know, so I'm sure it's arrived in your town or will be coming. So that's another way of getting people to see things that they normally wouldn't be exposed to. So that's
what's the name of this movie?
A World Apart.
She was the first woman, I believe, to be caught and arrested without resource in this new law which imprisons anyone.
Well, yes, this in fact, this is an old law. They make them every day, but this one was really old. In 1960, they used to have what they call a 90-day act, where they would arrest you and keep you in jail without trial, without communication for 90 days. Then they changed it to 180-day. Then they decided 180 wasn't enough. They changed it to an indefinite one where they can keep you forever. Pastor Farisani, Dean Farisani, who's Lutheran and, you know, was in jail for more than 400 days. And, you know, that's just another thing.
Again, there's this Ron Dellums bill. What you could do is write your senators, your congressmen, that you feel strongly about it, and, you know, he should support the bill. That bill is calling for complete, comprehensive sanctions in South Africa. It almost died, and it's supposed to go.
What's the schedule on that? Do you know?
When
it's being debated and voted on?
Yeah. Well, the latest I had last, when I came in last week, the House had already marked it. There's no problem in getting it through the House. The problem is going to be in the Senate. And the senators are using, I work with legislators around the country. And, you know, the rule of thumb in Washington, and this is what the right-wing churches have done so well under Reagan, if you remember. The rule of thumb is that if a U.S. senator gets 5 letters from, let's say, he or she is from Montana. If he or she gets 5 letters from people in Montana that say, we don't like this bill, they pay attention. If they get 10, they get worried. If they get 20, it's a major issue. And you know, another thing they argue about is that they never get these letters. And you remember what the right wingers used to do? With Oliver North, you know what some of the money they got from selling arms to the Ayatollah was the one they used for printing out those letters. You remember, Reagan used to stand up and say, look at Americans have responded. All those letters came from a computer in Washington. And, you know, they listed addresses in all the states. That's how Reagan pushed his conservative agenda. And, you know, but the point is that if you go back and write to your senator. Now, you may say, my senator is very good on South Africa. If your senator is good on South Africa, write them a letter that says, I'm proud for your stand that you've taken on South Africa, and I just want you to know that this is an issue that is important to me. And you know, but they argue that they never get any letters. I mean, you know, they never. I mean, even you know, we're talking about writing to Tsele. Now, you might say, well, writing to South Africa, oh, you know, they are going to burn the letters. Listen, I have, as a journalist working in South Africa, I know many cases where letters and concerns from people overseas meant a difference between a death sentence and going to jail for life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there were, I can tell you many, many cases where we knew, based on the law, that people were going to be sentenced to death, but there would be all these church people who are coming in as observers. In other words, when you send those letters, you really don't change apartheid in its roots, but you make them become unjust with a little humanity, if you can imagine that. And so it does make a slight difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, you have to remember, the South African government is very conscious of its image abroad.
Yeah.
It's so tarnished at this point, anything, what makes it worse, they don't want to deal with it. So you always find they want to portray this other image they have. They may send in your town a couple of businessmen from South Africa who are so used, you know, you want to go abroad, go to America, we give you a ticket. And you ask him, how are things in South Africa? He doesn't know what to say. Well, things are fine. He's not going to answer you because he's been used to come and change your image about them. Then you meet Dumsani or me, then say, you get confused. But the issue here is they are very conscious of their image overseas. And that's the important thing. And the other thing, like I mentioned, if you write your senator, it makes a difference. Even in your state, you write your state capital to the people who represent you there, that we feel strongly, we've done it in California, and it works. And that's the whole thing, how you can get through. For instance, your public school, if they have pension funds that are investing in South Africa, you can get them out. All you do is get together with the unions, like I said. From there, you'll be surprised about the impact. Your own cities, some of them were tongue-tied. They didn't know what to do. San Francisco didn't hesitate to pull all its money out because everybody was behind it. It didn't even take long for the city council to say, we're tired, get the money out. Where we put it, we don't know. We'll deal with that later. So those issues you go through. Then you have, we write people in Sacramento and direct letters to Washington, D.C., and they come back and you demand a meeting with your representative. Where do we stand with this bill? And how do we go about it? They listen if you go to them. They are the public servants, and you put them in there to represent you. So they have to do what you want them to do. You feel strongly about it, and they can do it.
Do you feel that the individual boycotting of, say, Coca-Cola or Kellogg's is worth anything?
Well, that's a question we get asked a lot. I mean, look, let me put it this way. I would rather have the Lutheran Church get its millions and millions out of South Africa than boycott a half a can of Coke. I mean, and it doesn't mean that because I drink Coke, I endorse what Coke does. But it's the point that we are making a choice. We are making a choice. We are saying which one has a larger impact. And you know, and people used to say, well, don't use it. See, the people against us, as I said last night, will try and make you look ridiculous. They'll say, well, you have a Ford and you still talk about divestment. Well, you know, you use a fork and knife that might have South African steel, and you know, that's the point. They will try everything to make you look ridiculous. But the point and the fact is that, yes, I may use an IBM computer in my office, but it worked better for me to get $1 billion of New York City funds out of IBM. IBM heard that message much louder than me not buying an IBM computer. Now, it doesn't mean that because I use an IBM computer, I condone it. I just choose a larger weapon. I mean, it's like fighting. Mm-hmm. I may slap you, you'll still understand what I'm saying, or I may throw a rock at you and you'll really understand what I'm saying, you see? And you know, it's a choice that I make. And you know, and I think the this is the conflict that you have to wrestle. I mean, if you write a letter to say to South Africa, release our own Lutheran friend, Reverend Tsile, out of jail, and this very church for which Tsile confessed his faith and worked for is the one that deals with the people who put him in jail. You see the conflict? I mean, you see how the conflict becomes? And you know, and you know, and I know people say, well, but it's the pension fund. I don't have the pension fund. We are the church. I mean, this is what they told us in all the Bible study here. I mean, you Lutherans told me this for the past 5 days. I mean, we are the church. And you know, and we make up the church. We, the congregation, make up. We don't sit back and say, well, you know, we'll wait for the bureaucrats in Chicago to decide what they're doing. We can certainly take steps. And it's been done in both the ALC and the LCA. I know it. I worked in the ALC and went to synods all over Nebraska and everywhere. We got the ALC to pass a resolution. We got the LCA in Louisville. So it can be done. And that was done by congregations. And some of the bureaucrats in the church thought we were crazy. I mean, without naming names, you know, some of the most revered people in the Lutheran church thought we were just being insane. But we said to them, we were right. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't have to do things because they are popular. You have to do them because they are right, because eventually they will become popular in the right way.
You know, the same paradox is used by unions here in the United States.
Right.
Everyone has seen Buy American, Bumper Sticker.
Right.
To suggest that if you don't buy American, that allows the Japanese to come in here and sell their cars.
Right.
Well, it's not the lack of our buying American cars which allows the Japanese to come over here and sell their cars. They're building a better car.
Better cars, right?
Now, when I bought my American Chrysler, 6 miles on, first owner, the engine's from Mitsubishi, which is Japanese, the body is built in Mexico. Okay? So these people, these American companies, are going to multinational places to make a profit.
Yeah. That's to come again to another thing, you remember the longshoremen's strike in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
They had all apples and oranges from South Africa. All it took somebody, newspapers, you know, some people don't read the fine print like Dunsani said. They tell you who's coming and where the cargo is coming from. It was raining. There were only 20 people, and we only talked to the foreman that, you know, this is double standards. You are here unloading this cargo from South Africa full of fruits. And the people who loaded the thing get $1 for maybe the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
And you get $17.
Jeez, no.
So what do you think? That he told his crew to go back home. Because it was raining, they met with the union, they had to dispose the cargo in. They diverted the cargo to Houston. And we called a couple of friends in Houston. People drove from San Francisco to Houston. I think they dumped it somewhere in the ocean because it didn't dock. After that, there's no more cargo coming into Oakland Port, San Francisco Port, from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it only took was 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting around and say, what's this? And somebody, oh, I don't understand. Yeah, it's a Dutch name for this cargo ship is coming from South Africa. You call the office, they tell you, yeah, it's docking, what is it carrying? They tell you too. What is carrying and how long it's been at sea. And all those seamen, they're so restless and they confronted with pickets. The police were there and the police agreed.
You see, the other thing, you know, which I know is going to happen, you guys are going to go back next week, tomorrow, whenever, and you're going to go to your congregation somewhere. You are black people, and in fact, what we really just need is to pray for those people. You know, we don't want to do anything with them. Ask yourself, if investments benefit black people, why do you invest in the government? How many companies invest directly with black people in South Africa? They don't. I mean, you know, it's when you begin to ask those questions, I mean, companies are not there because they love black people. I mean, if they love black people, they would start right here in Minneapolis or in New York or in Chicago. And, you know, if you think about that, you begin to see it in the business.
Is the
private
reason available for rental?
For rental, yes. Or even buying a car. It's printed. It's
CVS.
No, no, it's from California and Israel. And they are in San Francisco. And I can write down, tomorrow we have the last session in the morning, I can write down the name of the, not last session, there'll be several others going on throughout the week, but I will write down the name tomorrow morning on the board for California. Now, here's the thing you could do. You know why the Religious Action Network works? It's because you may come from a congregation that is maybe just 100 people. You can't afford to spend $300 on a filling. But if you know of a Methodist and a Catholic and other congregation in your town, you may pass the word together and buy a filling, which you can show around. I mean, this is what we're trying to do with the Religious Action Network. Because not every congregation, you might say, my congregation, I said, let's write letters, and only 10 people wrote letters. But if you know some other people in town, it would help. Sorry, I should have another. Yes.
Remembering back to the things that you experienced as you convinced, or your group convinced the LCA and ALC to divest or at least make the resolutions, are those kinds of things going on now in an effort to convince the people in charge in bureaucrats and AELC to do the same thing?
Yeah, where's the bishop? Chicken on me again. Hello, Bishop. Yes. Yes. I think the from what I've understand, and it's good the Bishop is here tonight. From what I've understand is that the new church, as they call it, was aware of these positions, of course, which had been taken by the other churches before the merger. But the new board they put up decided that they were not going to honor those things. Now, first of all, I think in simple fairness, that is not fair, because both the ALC and the LCA and the Evangelical Church had taken the decision. So to come up with a new board that says, forget it, guys, and you know, we may have agreed about it before, we are not going to follow it, I don't think that's fair. And but I think they meant, listen, come on, Bishop, it's your church, speak up.
Well, it's we just passed through the first phase of what's going to be a long-term campaign again to try and get the new all deals about this investment. When the new church came into being, we're off. Those of you who are in the ALC had an organization for your pensions whereby the church council or the national convention could say divest, and they had to divest. Those of you who came out of the LCA were part of an organization in which the Board of Pensions is totally independent, and the highest authority of the church could say to the Board of Pensions, divest, and they say, well, we'll take it under advisement, and that's as far as they would need to go. The new ELCA Board of Pensions is modeled like the LCA, and not like the ALC. And despite the fact that the Constituting Convention voted for complete and total divestment, and most of the boards, at least half of the boards of the current ELCA have asked for divestment, the Church Council has asked for divestment, and a new fledgling organization called Pension Members for Divestment, which I'd like sometime during the next few days, I'll do a whole session on, to talk about the campaign, has all went towards the Board of Pensions in their meeting 6 weeks ago, and the Board of Pensions voted not to divest. With the clearly stated will of the church that there would be divestment.
How do they respond when they refuse to accede to the wishes of the people?
Some of the stuff that Dumasani has said at this session and other sessions has just been just quoting them. They, at least their front out-front reasons are that the that their primary responsibility is to take care of my pension. And their fiduciary responsibilities, the laws of the country, demands that they do nothing else but that, prudent man law and so forth like that. I think there's a lot of other reasons to explain it, but these are the primary ones which they are using. And that the best that they can do is that if they are considering the investing or divesting from any particular stock, And if there is a comparable, if there are two stocks to buy, and that they are completely equal on every other basis except for the fact that one is invested in South Africa and the other isn't, if then they can choose the non-South African one. That's as far as they can go. The reaction of the church is just now beginning to develop as to how we will react, how the institution of the church, this church council and so forth, will respond to the fact that they have failed to accede to that which we believe is the clearly stated will of the church. And now the long-range campaign begins. For us, we put together a grassroots campaign for 3 months long to try and go for that one meeting. If they had voted to divest, that which we now have to do would not be necessary. But we believe also at the same time the anger of the people from congregations and synods and in the national boards and staff of the church should be really strong enough to begin to really confront that. The alternative strategies for that are multiple. Yes.
Would
individual letters help to the pension board?
Everything is going to be needed now. It will be on the 25th and 26th of this month in Chicago. The gathering of those grassroots organizations that are now going to put together a long-term grassroots movement called Pension Members for Divestment to work with those inside the institution who are also pushing for it. We'll bring out a much larger long-range strategy, which could include anything from demanding a change in the Constitution to that we no longer have this Board of Pensions that is so independent, getting 60 of the 65 synods to vote for it again, to doing whatever. There's at least 8 possible strategies that we've listed. I'd be glad at a session which we're just concentrating on that to deal with those also.
Can I just say something? They are saying, hear this, because this is going to confuse you when you go back. They are saying, you see, there's a law which was passed in the 30s when the union called the Teamsters, right? The Teamsters are still, even up to now, even though the law is getting tighter, were famous for taking people's pension funds and going to Las Vegas and laying it on the tables, if you remember. That's why they keep on prosecuting. So the law was passed which says, it's called fiduciary responsibility or prudent man rule, as it's well known. The prudent man rule says if you are a member of a pension fund trustee board, you must, by law, invest the pension funds in a prudent way. I mean, that is U.S. law. We are not calling on them to disobey U.S. law. In fact, 25 states, more than 100 cities, more than 200 colleges have divested without disobeying that law. The attorney generals of Maryland, of California, of Nebraska. Nebraska was the first state, by the way, to divest. You might think they're cornhuskers, but they're way ahead of everybody. And the attorney generals in all these states went back to the interpretation of the law and said, this is right now. The right-wing people challenged the law before the Maryland Supreme Court. We won in the Supreme Court in Maryland. Why? Because pension funds already are exercising what is called screens, investment screens. Well, what are investment screens? There are churches, like the Methodists, that say you can't invest church money in cigarette companies or liquor companies. I mean, that is already a condition. If you say, I don't want my money in cigarette or liquor, that is a condition. So why shouldn't racism be a condition? Why should we invest in racism? And when they argue that we are there to make money, we've always argued, and this was argued even in court, if you really are just in the business of making money, put it in pornography and cocaine. You'll make more money. Then they turn around and say, we can't put it in that aspect. Why racism? So we are not saying that they should jeopardize anybody's pension. In fact, nobody's pension has ever been jeopardized. We are simply saying that you cannot, on one hand, say we confess in the Christ, and then 3 months later get a dividend check from racism. You can't say we love Thel and put up his picture and his name in that room, and, you know, and write letters and turn around and fund the people who are keeping. It doesn't jive. And, you know, it's the same thing that the Methodists are wrestling with and the Catholics are wrestling with, because you really, this is why people don't stay in church, because it makes the church irrelevant. You see, it makes it irrelevant, because it's saying, hey, on one hand, this is what they're doing. Who needs to go to this church? Sorry, I saw a hand up there.
Well, I just want to ask a question. This is a big enough group. Maybe someone will know. There are a few Missouri Synod people here, and we have our church body hasn't been involved in this discussion about pension money. Do we need to be writing to St. Louis and finding out if our pension money is involved in this kind of thing, or are they not, or do you know?
I think the bishop was ordained by the Missouri Synod.
So do we need to be pursuing this to find out?
Yeah, it started with Missouri Synod. It's easy to say starting with Missouri Synod. It's starting much, much farther back in the organizing. But it's got to be started. And we're hopeful that people from Missouri Synod will be part of this coalition, so that two things can be
in started. Our pension plan, they may be investing in South Africa.
Oh, they are, and they will write to you and tell you it is none of your business, and they are extremely rude and crude in their response. But you should write. I think I'd almost rather deal at this point with Missouri Synod and their honesty about that than the current Board of Pensions that we have in the LCA, which in their politeness and in their long, long speeches about how they oppose apartheid just take up so much time before they say no.
We have our work cut out for us,
yes,
too. Then.
Yes, and if there's anybody here from Missouri Synod who would like to talk about how they can somehow join together while we're putting together this ELCA coalition and piggyback together on that, I would just really love to do that. Sometime in the next few days, I'd like to have this scheduled sometime where we can talk extensively about the campaign within ELCA, those who are interested, and Missouri Synod. I'd like to say just two more things about this. One is something about one is going to take a lot of time because it's about to assign.
The other takes
a lot less time to say. We started our campaign for the divestment in the ALC and the LCA in 1979.
Jesus.
And this Methodist has been an honorary Lutheran for a long time. And there has been the success that we had in both getting the ALC to have a policy of divestment and have the LCA in a much more complex and sophisticated way resisted, but still tremendous steps of success, was tremendously due to the work and the advice and the contribution and the participation of Dumasani. But that's only the beginning. I just think nobody has said this yet about him, and I said that when Dumasani came up here,
say this.
When Dumasani came up here, I said that I would help him to organize this if I had the one condition fulfilled, that I could introduce him. I've never been given that opportunity. Dumasani has been all those universities and unions and state governments and others who have divested over the last 10 years and who have also participated in the campaign for sanction over the last 10 years have all heard speeches by Dumasani Kamala. Dumasani last year was runner-up as the most popular speaker on university campuses in the United States. Dumasani single-handedly organized the key campaign that dumped thousands of keys, tens of thousands of keys, on the embassy of Washington and the consulate in New York, of South Africa, in the Free the Children campaign in this past year, and is now being the organizer of the, what's the PAC?
The Religious Action Network.
RA. RA, yeah. It's not even DAC. Mm-hmm. The Religious Action Network, which is pulling together and for the first time ecumenical responses of Christians, Jews, Muslims, and whatever you have in every community in the United States, attempting to get an ecumenical response from within the United States, and not just simply denomination by denomination. And my introduction of Dunasani could take an hour, but that's just a brief outline of the kind of work and the privilege it's been, and the dependence that we're going to have as we once again reestablish ourselves as Lutherans. I know not everybody here is Lutheran, but to let this Methodist be our inspiration and help in pulling together something that's going to finally, hopefully, take this ELCA to put its money where its mouth is, or take its money away from where it's just been mouthing all along. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing. I just really need to express that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
The second thing is that when we started 10 years ago on these campaigns for divestment, we were only able to say, no, we don't think you're going to lose money if you divest from South Africa. And over the last 10 years, with the help of the ACOA and others that Dunasani works with, and the kind of documentation that's been done, is irrefutably demonstrating that a South Africa-free portfolio is equal to, in return, and to a great extent, if you've got a good investor, even has greater potential for earnings than a South African investment portfolio. It's irrefutable. So the people who are resisting are doing it more than ever, obviously, out of their own ideological commitments. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be dealt with and exposed. But every statement within the ELCA or any other denomination that says, are we going to lose money? And that's the reason we can't do it, because we have to protect my pension. Has got to be refuted as saying, not only cannot care if I had to lose a little money rather than make my pension on the blood of the South African, but I can even make money on it now. It's fiduciary responsibility to get the hell out of South Africa, because you're going to lose money staying in. And I'm convinced more than ever that the people who are staying in are doing it out of their own, even maybe more unconsciously than consciously, out of their own ideological commitments and their own political beliefs about South Africa and their own racism.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
I have a comment about the proof, man.
Right.
I'm not an attorney, but in discussions with my attorney, as long as with respect to the pension plans, and maybe not everyone here has a pastoral pension plan, maybe there's some individual plans, but if the investment philosophy of the plan is stated, that takes priority over the prudent man syndrome.
Oh, yes.
Stayed in that, there will be no investments in South Africa.
Amen.
And also, I read an article a month or so ago in Forbes about a court case that challenged the prudent man business, where I don't remember the details, but basically it was the reverse.
Baltimore.
Right. No, this was, I think, in Atlanta or something.
Oh, really?
Where the trustees were being prudent persons, and then the people who were involved said, you know, we told you to do this and you didn't do it, and something. So that prudent man thing is going to, I think, become more open to interpretation with
oh, yes. Yes, in fact, here's even something that just says what you're saying. If you go to Merrill Lynch, I mean, they are the biggest in these investment companies. Merrill Lynch, the president of Merrill Lynch gave a statement. He said, anybody who says to us, I don't want my money in South Africa, but let me do that. They have a division that does it. I mean, Merrill Lynch does it. So does Smith Barney, and you mentioned them. And, you know, it's When we decide, I mean, the whole thing about the prudent man rule is we as a group, a congregation, whatever, can make a decision and say, we don't our money. But you see, for us as Christians, a church is not an ordinary institution. I mean, we confess to Christ. We confess to the scriptures. We say by going to confession, by going to church every Sunday, that we know more than the secular world. Now, if we are the ones who then end up being caught in the I mean, the secular world is diverse. I mean, look, if your congregation is in Minnesota, I mean, here the state of Minnesota, I mean, is divesting and is divesting a lot of money, and you don't do it. The other problem you have is that we have our, forget other congregations, we have Lutherans who use the same hymn books, the same scripture in South Africa, mm-hmm. who are suffering under this government. How can we really look them? Tonight we're going to be singing here during the service. We're going to sing Nkosi Sikelel' Iafrika, God Bless Africa, and all its people that are in it. And you know, we will stand for that national anthem of South Africa. That's the hymn they sing when they go to jail and disappear. Can we really raise our voices tonight and cry to God, help those people, and 3 months later we know, let a mailman come, there's a check that becomes a dividend for our church. I think it's such a conflict.
Anyway, these are the addresses what we have. Yeah. Africa Fund, 198 Broadway, New York. And
it's on the sheet, anybody who got a sheet.
And it's on the sheet. And
mine will be, I work with the grassroots people in San Francisco. In Bethlehem Lutheran Church, 959 12th Street, Oakland. And those who have computers, what I do with a couple of my friends, if you have a modem, we use the bulletin board. You can paste anything and get a reaction overnight. So, and you can talk to almost even people in Hawaii about South Africa. You'll be amazed.
Can you reach your phone board through that number?
No, I can get your phone number, or you can get mine, and then you'll be amazed. You can just put anything and network that way, and that's how we. And we, if you need grassroots information, Dubsan is doing this full time. Some of us have full time jobs that we help where we can. So I went through my pastor who really got me here, Reverend Dr. Will Hetzfeld. And he has done a lot of work there. So grassroots information and other things that Dumsani is doing this on other aspects. And I'll be glad, you know, I deal with the unions too. So we can see what we can do. But if you have a modem, put it on whatever. But we will talk.
Sorry, Nancy, Well, we're going to take maybe about two or three questions, maybe two.
Is the place there? We'll come back to this. Somehow the Africa Fund?
Yes, I work for the Africa Fund.
And the Serafina, that Broadway play, is it going to tour? And proceeds go to the Africa Fund?
They did have a show for the Africa Fund. What really the Africa Fund is we receive monies for projects that go to Africa. I mean, for instance, I'm not here to really tell you what to do, but one of the projects we did, which we had some Lutheran participation, but I thought there could have been more. You know, there are refugee camps for Namibian kids, and in Angola and in Zambia. All these people needed, these are little kids, all they needed were toys. My kid grew up here, he used to have toys. I mean, you buy all these toys, you never know where to keep them because kids buy them every week and what have you. And you know, and the UN was prepared to mail them out. So all you had to do was just bring them. I mean, that's all they were asking. We had another one where we just, they needed diapers. All you had to do was buy Huggies, whatever. And the UN was going to send them over. And, you know, we didn't get that. Those are the kinds of things we do. Serafina, they are on Broadway and they are sold out for so long. So I don't think they will travel.
But they're not financially connected to the Africa.
No, they are an independent. They are independent group on Broadway. Somebody this side.
For those of us particularly living in rural communities, and actually I think for all of us, there's an ongoing struggle with the media in the United States to get ongoing accurate information about what's happening in South Africa.
Right.
Now, besides the Africa Fund and what the two of you are involved in, are there other sources of information that might be available to us?
Yes, tomorrow morning, in fact. What time is that thing, Jody?
10:45.
Before my bus leaves.
That's right.
there's a cable program I'm involved in called South Africa Now. And these are journalists in South Africa and the United States who are doing stories that you never see in regular media. And they are, now, it might be listed on your cable program thing as South Africa Now, and you think, what's this? But what I'm going to do, I'm going to show you 5 minutes of the kind of story they cover tomorrow morning. And they're called South Africa Now. Now, here's the other thing you can do. If you like, if you gave me your name and address, and you wrote next to the name whether you want your church or congregation to go on the Religious Action Network just to see what's happening. You don't have to join. You're not joining. I know people don't like joining anything. But, you know, if you want to look at a couple of information and action alerts and decide whether you want to do that. Or if you write around your name, you want to be personally listed on a mailing list so you can get information much quicker than it usually does. I'll be very happy to do that. But this South Africa Now already is in 92 cable stations, and they say it's reaching over 22 million people in the United States. I don't know how they do that, but if you have cable, you've probably missed it because it's not properly identified. But in the morning at 10:45, we will be talking about the role of the media. I mean, you should, by now you're probably asking yourself, how come I never heard about these things? And the reason you haven't heard about them is what we'll talk about in the morning. One more question before we go.
Could you just give us the number of the bill in Congress?
The bill in Congress, okay. If you take one of these, it's listed right in the back. You see? What you want to do about Congress, or maybe write it here, just wipe some of this stuff. And you know, what you want to do really, what you really want to do is don't worry about writing to your congressperson. And you know, because in Congress, they say that they tell us that they have, again, if you think your congressperson needs to know or is a good person who's done a good job, please do. But what's really important now is to reach the senators. And you don't have to write to Washington. And you know, in your own town, senators usually have an office in one or two towns. Write to them and say, this is my concern. The main thing is that you have to sign the letter. So because you know, they in the Senate office, they look at letters that come and just say and sign John or Jane, they put them aside. But if it's signed Joseph from 5997 Minneapolis, they know that that person is in their area, so they will respond much better. But one thing you have to know, you can make a difference. You can. I mean, you know what, in Wyoming, let me tell you, I can, well, in fact, lunch is at 5:15, so I'll take 2 minutes and 10. In Wyoming, two women who were members of the local, I forget what denomination was, stood outside a bank with a sign that said, the local bank, said, stop making loans to South Africa. Now, that picture probably didn't run in the papers in Wyoming, but it was page one in South Africa on the front page. You know why? Because South Africa, remember, this is a problem about racism. They look at states. Now, if something comes out of California, they say, oh, well, there are black people there. And you know, if something comes out of New York, they say there are black people there. But when it comes from some of these states where they know that the black population is almost non-existent, it bothers. You know, when in Nebraska, I mean, this is way back in 79, when those farmers, in Nebraska, it was started by farmers, not even in Omaha or Lincoln and whatever, I forget some little town. Farmers in Nebraska simply said, why is it our land taxes they were paying to the state, that money was invested in South Africa? But hey, we don't even get money to help us with our family farms, our money is paid to the state. They pushed a bill through. And the editorials in South Africa said, one of them started off in the government and said, fancy Nebraska, middle of nowhere, a corn state like us, because there are parts of South Africa that look like Nebraska. But it had a tremendous impact because they suddenly realize that we really can no longer lie about this. So, you know, you don't have to go to your congregation on Monday and bash them over the head and say, you poor folks move. You have to do it with kindness, you know, because the folks don't know that. And you know, you might even have to start with your pastor. And you know, they don't know that. And you know, yeah. But you do it with kindness and just, you know, this is what, the pastor is probably going to send you to the social action committee. And I know I can tell that a few members of the social action committee are here.